Once upon a time, when Unitarian congregations in America were coming to terms with post-Civil War society, when they were both overwhelmed by the social impact of industrialization and intrigued by the modern conveniences made possible by it, there arose a new way of describing their faith. It was nicknamed the Unitarian Covenant, and it was drawn from a sermon by James Freeman Clark in 1886. You can still find it carved into the stone walls of many of our congregations. This covenant proclaimed faith in the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, the leadership of Jesus, salvation by character, and the continuity of human development in all worlds, or the progress of mankind onward and upward forever. So looking back, this covenant seems a little overly optimistic. Forever, really? No limits, straight to the top, no setbacks? Over time, you know, the beginning part of that covenant sort of was less consensus, but the last part kind of carried through. And for people of means in the late 1800s, history might have seemed like a continuous march of progress towards ease and intellectual accomplishment. There were goods from around the world being served in their art and literature salons. There were factories, there were trains. Surely, as society advanced, people would have the time to perfect their character and draw closer to God through personal growth and development. What was less obvious to many was that the whole system of expansion was built on exploitation. Exploitation of labor, extraction of natural resources beyond what was sustainable. And because the people who were doing the preaching and the thinking and the policy making benefited from the economic system, its flaws were more difficult for them to see. In her book, After the Good News, Progressive Faith Beyond Optimism, my colleague, the Reverend Nancy MacDonald Ladd, talks about the heritage of 19th century utopian communities and intellectual movements, and how we need to sing a new song if we are to be truthful and useful in the world as it is. She writes, "The great modernist churches of the mid-20th century were tied to the concept of unending societal progress birthed after the Industrial Revolution. That vision of unending societal potential was, in turn, tied to patriarchal and racially unjust systems that benefited from the oppression they decried. The prevailing cultural and socioeconomic ethos of this gospel of unending progress was built by and for white men with significant power. They exercised that power through seemingly benevolent dominion over the earth, its peoples, and its mysteries alike. So that explains a lot of things." So ends the quote. So she connects everything here: gender oppression, racism, economic injustice, exploitation, and most pressingly, as we approach the climate strike this Friday, the future of our planet. The economic systems that led us to where we are in the current climate crisis, the systems that viewed our living planet and exploited labor, as raw materials for the gain of a few, are tangled up with some of the theological ideas that were foundational to our faith movement at the end of the 19th century. Are those dots connecting? Right? Okay. MacDonald Ladd goes on to say that a movement that recognizes the world as it is must follow the leadership of people rooted in marginalized communities. We must listen to those who know that the myth of unending progress is not a universal truth. We cannot stick with the narrative that things will get better if we just hang in there. Our theological heritage of onward and upward forever has had some good points. It has helped us to see the positive potential of humanity and not just the depravity. It has encouraged our curiosity and our development of the very science that helps us to describe where we are with truth and data. It has affirmed character traits like generosity and kindness. Yet the pursuit of endless expansion, either for personal gain or the growth of industrial corporations, comes at a price. The story we've been telling ourselves for the last 100 years about inevitable, linear, and upward human progress has gotten us into trouble. Disentangling our life-saving, humanity-affirming, earth-respecting faith from economic inequality and environmental destruction is possible, but it won't be easy. We need to rethink our expectations about what our lives will be like, how our congregations should operate, and what it means to search for spiritual grounding. With some understanding of how the economic, social, and spiritual thinking of the past led to our current crisis, the next project is imagining how to reorder our lives, our congregations, and our society for long-term resilience. An economic system that sees human capital and natural resources as inert things that can be fed into a machine of wealth expansion has been good for a few and disastrous for many. As Sophia has reminded us many times, our work for climate justice must be inclusive of the leadership of people who are most at risk from the impact of climate change. Hurricanes, droughts, wars over limited natural resources, and the dangers caused by melting glaciers and rising sea levels are devastating to all of us. And yet it is the poorest and most vulnerable who will bear the worst of the impact. To start figuring out how to live differently, we can listen to the people who experience some of the most severe effects of the climate crisis and of the human rights abuses that go with it. The demands of the climate strike include respect for indigenous land and sovereignty. We've seen in this country vicious government and corporate attacks against the Standing Rock water protectors protesting the Dakota Access oil pipeline. And in Brazil, we've seen similar attacks against indigenous activists trying to protect their home in the Amazon. We've seen the injustice against Aboriginal people in Australia whose treaty rights are being ignored in order to sell their tribal lands to a coal mining corporation. All over the world, respect for indigenous people are set up against resource extraction that degrades our planet. Indigenous people are among those whose survival is most affected by the changes to our planet, among those whose human rights are most threatened by the exploitative systems that got us in this mess, and among those who are most organized for resistance. And so the strike demands respect for their sovereignty. The climate strike also demands a transition that invests in prosperity for communities on the front lines of poverty and pollution, and welcoming those displaced by the effects of climate crisis, economic inequality, violence, and lack of opportunity, end quote. So again, those who are marginalized by disinvestment in their neighborhoods, by environmental racism, by working class jobs that expose them to toxins. Leaders of these communities have been organizing for years and have direct experience to share about what our society could do differently. Refugees and migrants, people whose livelihoods or safety have been interrupted by climate crisis and by the operations of global capitalism that sees them as easy to sacrifice, their humanity and worth must be centered as we enter this new world of disruption and disaster. Naomi Klein, in an interview with The Guardian newspaper, links the fear of environmental refugees with the resurgence of white supremacy and anti-immigrant nationalism, calling it climate barbarism. Again, are we connecting? Yes. Klein goes on to say that individual choices will not solve the climate crisis. She says we've been trained to think of ourselves as consumers before thinking of ourselves as humans. And as humans, we need a chance to grieve together, to notice our feelings and process our experience, to connect face to face, to experience ourselves as living beings who are part of the natural world, and to band together for winnable struggles. I want to pause and notice that we are human beings having some feelings in this room. Yeah? It's important to be together. So now we're talking theological language again. How are we to relate to one another and to the living ecosystem of which we are a part? That is a spiritual question. How do we lament, make amends, and turn again toward right relationship? That is a religious question. How do we stay committed to our understanding of ourselves in community, not as isolated beings or lonely fighters against the world, but as responsible and responsive to that which is larger than ourselves? That's an eternal question. It's time to reorganize our congregations, our communities, our governments, so that right relationship with our planet and with human beings, starting with the most vulnerable among us, is more important than the values that underpin colonialism, extractivism, and endless consumption. I don't have all of the answers for how we do that, but I'm planning to listen to the people who have been organizing for a long time across lines of race and geography, class, age, to listen to the people who build communities that take care of each other and move in solidarity with each other, rather than trying to live single-issue lives, which Audre Lorde told us a long time ago was impossible. To listen to youth leaders who will be dealing with this mess long after I'm gone, and who are past ready to stop engaging in business as usual. I don't believe that we can put our planet back the way it was. I do believe that everything we do to mitigate the effects of climate change, even a fraction of a percent, matters, and that we have to move forward in a way that helps us to care for and follow the lead of people who are most vulnerable to the effects of climate change. I believe we can change how we understand what it means to be human. For some of us, that's going to include participating in the climate strike and in other direct actions. Others of us might organize to disrupt business as usual in other ways. We might sustain urban cooperative farms, or community canning kitchens, or networks of neighbors who check in when the for-profit healthcare system leaves people behind. We might participate in clothes closets or food gleaning projects or resource centers for reclaimed building materials. We are humans, not mere market units. Whatever we're doing to reorient our society toward climate justice, whether that is advocacy or caregiving or developing new ideas, let us do it in community, remembering that to be human is to be in relationship. So who's ready? All right? Who's ready to witness? Who's ready to care for some other people? Who's ready to shout out some ideas, not right in this room, but in the public square? Right? Are we ready to listen? Are we ready to move? Okay. The challenge facing us is vast. Our response must be on the same scale, and it must be infused with compassion and humility. We are called to transformation. Let's follow that calling together. So be it. Blessed be. Amen. Speaking of compassionate people, let's welcome Emily Tien, our board member of the week.